Okay, so I think we can get going. Thanks for coming down, everybody. It's a pleasure to see you here. My name is Toby Uvery, and I will be talking to you for the next, half an hour, 40 minutes or so, on the practice of mindful self-leadership and doing a couple of leading you in a couple of exercises based around the principles and practices of mindful self-leadership. So, in fact, what I want to do right at the beginning is, rather than start with a spiel, is just go straight into a mindfulness exercise where we'll be looking, just investigating experientially the basic terrain of mindful self-leadership. So just for a few minutes, if that's okay, we'll just go straight into an exercise. Okay. So what I'd like you to do, just find yourself a nice comfortable position in your chair or on your cushion. Your feet and legs in a position that is comfortable for you. Your hips, torso, neck and head in a relatively comfortable straight line. So if you were if you like dropping a plumb line down from your crown to the center of your hips, your torso would be in a relatively straight line from the crown to the hips. Your arms and hands either in your lap or on your knees, whichever is comfortable for you. And I'd like us just to take a few slightly deeper breaths as you're breathing in, breathing your awareness into your body, into the here and now. And as you breathe out, I'd just like you to feel yourself releasing physical and psychological tension as you exhale. Breathing in, gathering your attention into your body, into the here and now. Breathing out, just gently letting go of tension from the mind and body as you exhale. And what we're going to be doing initially is just doing a little bit of self-awareness. And so what I'd like you to do initially is to focus your attention on your sensory experience of your body and your environment. So the felt experience of your physical body, the sensory information filtering in through your eyelids, coming in through your ears, the experience of sounds, the temperature, the movement of the air, the moment-to-moment experience of your physical body and your body energy. As you're breathing in, just be aware of the kind of totality of your felt experience of your body and senses. As you're breathing out, just relax into the flow of that awareness, of that sensory awareness. And what I'd like us to observe as we're just kind of going with the flow of our experience of our body and our senses is the sense of self, the sense of a person that accompanies that experience of being in a body and experiencing the sensory world. So it's just a slightly different point of focus from just merely observing the senses and the body. It's actually being aware of the feeling of a self that goes with that experience. There's kind of a sense of a me or an I. Occupying, possessing that body. And just what is, how does that self or I feel? The self or the I arising from the senses, arising from the experience of the body. And you're breathing in, as you're breathing in, gently being aware of that sense of a physical and sensory self. Breathing out, you're relaxing into your awareness of that self, your attention to that self. Just getting a feel for, a very conscious feel for what it's like. Just using the breathing as an anchor for your awareness and a little reminder, so as you're breathing in, you're focusing gently on that sense of a sensory, physical self. Breathing out, going with the flow of that awareness, of that attention. So we're going to change our point of focus a little bit now. So up to this point we've been focusing our attention and our awareness upon the physical and somatic aspect of our awareness. So I want you to be aware now of the area of awareness that pertains to your mind, that is your thoughts, the ideas, flow of images and emotions that is passing through your moment-to-moment experience of mental awareness or mind. So as you're breathing in, you're taking in, you're aware of that flow of thoughts, feelings and images, of emotions. As you're breathing out, you're continuing to pay kind of benevolent attention to that flow of awareness, that attention to mind. Again, you're just using the breathing as an anchor for your awareness, and every time you begin your inhalation or begin your exhalation, you're just checking that your attention, that your awareness is still focused on the job, which is just merely being aware of the flow of thoughts, ideas, images, and emotions within the mind. And what I'd like you to notice is that with every thought, with every image, with every emotion passing through your awareness, there is a sense of self. There is an I that arises or that co-arises with that experience. So we're just changing the focus of our attention, our awareness, slightly now. So rather than just being purely focused on the thoughts, images and emotions flowing through our mind, we're paying attention to the sense of self that is arising from moment to moment based around the contents of our mind. So this sense of self arising from the mind is intimately related to but different from the sense of self arising from the body, from the physical body and senses. I just want you to get a feeling for what that experience of a self in relation to the mind is actually like as a moment-to-moment experience. Not as a philosophy or as an idea, but as an experience. So there's a sense in which this is our kind of one of our deepest, most subjective moment-to-moment experiences in our life, this sense of self accompanying everything that we do. Okay, so this is a relatively kind of brief tour of the arena of self-awareness. So we're going to be moving on to a slightly different object of self-awareness. What I'd like you to do now is just to relax your body and mind as much as you can. Again, using the breathing just as you exhale, I'd like you to feel yourself relaxing your physical body as much as you can and letting go of the activity of the mind as much as you can. It doesn't need to be perfect at all. If there's still mental activity, don't fight that. That's not a problem. But just as you're breathing out, just enter into the experience of releasing, of letting go, of tension, of mental activity. And what I'd like you to focus your attention on as you're doing this is the experience of awareness itself. So not the experience of the body and the senses, not the experience of thoughts, ideas or emotions, but the experience of awareness itself. Just that sense of a living space which surrounds and contains everything else that you experience. So you can't struggle to get it. You can just, all you can do is really let awareness arise in and of itself by relaxing the body and letting go of the mind. And when you let go of your attention to the mind, awareness itself, that kind of spacious, living awareness, just arises perfectly naturally and by itself. It has no physical characteristics. It has no mental characteristics. It's just an open space. A living open space. And again, what I'd like you to do is just to observe that there is also a sense of self that arises in relation to this experience of spacious awareness. And qualitatively, it's a different experience of self from the self arising from the body, the self arising from the mind. And because it's purely awareness, purely the experience of open, living spaciousness, the experience of self that arises from awareness itself is qualitatively different. So within this experience of open, spacious, living awareness, there is also a self. And I just want you to relax and experience that. No need to call it anything, no need to philosophize about it. Just allow yourself to enter into it. So, these three domains, the domain of the physical and sensory, the domain of mind, and the domain of spacious awareness, are present for you in each moment of your life. And the principal causal agent in each moment of this experience of body, mind, and awareness is you, yourself. So, what I want you to focus on now is kind of the combined experience of self arising from body, mind and awareness. So as you're breathing in, just focus on that combined essential experience of self. Breathing out, relaxing into the flow of that experience and awareness of self. Again, it's not a philosophy, it's not a concept we're focusing on, it's the experience, the moment-to-moment actual experience of the self. Our own subjective experience. And I just want you to recognize as you're breathing with that, as you're aware of it, that that, or this, is the principal causal agent in your life. And if you want to take your life in the direction you really want to go, the first place you need to look is this experience, and using the power inherent in this experience of self, owning that power. So nobody else can give it to you. And nobody else can save you from the responsibility of owning the creative causal power of yourself in each moment. So really what self, you know, mindful self-leadership is about is becoming fully aware of this moment-to-moment experience of self, of owning the power of that experience of self, taking responsibility for it, and asserting it appropriately in your life in terms of your creative power and your choices. All I want to do, just for the last part of the exercise, is just to sit with this power inherent within this experience of self. Again, it's not a philosophy, it's not a set of beliefs. You're tapping into an experience, a subjective experience, that is present with you all the time. Breathing in the self, breathing out the self. Okay, so without being in a hurry, next couple of breaths as you're breathing in, I'd like you to breathe the kind of relatively subtle energy of the meditation into your body, into your cellular structure, so that you're grounding the energy of the exercise into your body. So you're physicalizing it, so you're really bringing your attention fully back to the physical world. You're becoming aware of your immediate environment, the room in which we're sitting. And then when you're ready, without being in a hurry, you can open your eyes and bring the exercise to a close. Okay, so what I really wanted to do in that opening exercise, apart from just chilling out a little bit, was to really point out the living working space that we're interested in with mindful self-leadership. So the practice of mindfulness is really about an existential inquiry into experience. That's what makes it slightly different from other disciplines in that in its purest, most, in my opinion, competent form, what it's about is cutting through concepts and really getting to the way in which we experience our moment-to-moment reality, and the question of how to deal with that appropriately, effectively, adequately is the fundamental question that mindfulness asks of us. Okay? So, ideally, I've just said that mindfulness cuts through concepts and allows us to experience our reality directly. So, of course, concepts are a perfectly valid part of our reality and a very valuable part of our reality. So, ideally, what also mindfulness does is it allows what I call our natural intelligence, our natural rational and logical faculty to function effectively. So it's a complementary win-win situation with mindfulness and the mind. Mindfulness is taking us beyond our conceptual world to a direct encounter with our moment-to-moment reality, which in turn releases our natural intelligence, our rational faculty, to do its job better. So we're not saying mind is bad, direct experience and encounter, non-conceptual encounter reality is good. We're saying we're trying to bring them into a complementary whole. Okay. So really there are two traditions of mindfulness. So quite often when we think about mindfulness, we think about, you know, the kind of Buddhist and Hindu Eastern traditions of mindfulness. But there is also kind of a Western tradition of mindfulness that, I mean, I'm painting in very broad brushstrokes here because we've got 20 minutes, right? So, but broadly speaking, you'd say it was started with a kind of existential tradition of philosophy and psychology that that kind of started in the 18th, 19th centuries, Kierkegaard, Nietzsche, Kant, Hegel, those types of philosophers, and went into the kind of existential and kind of humanistic type of psychology that extended out into the 20th century. Again, very, 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 very broad brushstrokes. But these two traditions of mindfulness have a slightly different emphasis. Okay, so in their pure and original forms, the Eastern forms of mindfulness are about how you can transcend the self, go beyond the self, and achieve enlightenment, right? So the final object of Eastern mindfulness in its pure form is to go beyond the mind, to transcend the mind, and to experience enlightenment, okay, a spiritual enlightenment. Within the Western tradition, the idea with mindfulness is to become aware of the mind in order to develop the self. Develop the mind, develop the self. So rather than having an object where it is actually to transcend the self, transcend the ego, the idea with the Western tradition of mindfulness is to develop the ego, develop the self to greater and greater heights and depths. Okay? So mindful self-leadership is an attempt, you know, to bring together these two traditions of mindfulness into a complementary whole, where we are simultaneously using it as a tool for developing the fundamental competence and faculties of ourself as an ego, as a rational ego, as a human being, and at the same time, and in a complementary way, developing the capacity to go beyond the experience of ourself as an ego, as a human being, into a sense of self that is, for want of a better word, transcendent or enlightened. Okay, so that sounds a bit grand, but I want to ground it now into the exercise that we just did. So in reality, those two domains, the development of the self, the development of the body-mind, and the transcendence of the self, the achievement of enlightenment, are are not about abstract spaces that are beyond our present experience. They are right here in each moment of our life. And in particular, they're in these three domains that we investigated in the exercise. Very, very simple. We have the domain of the senses, right? And the domain, the experience, moment-to-moment experience of existing within a body, being a sensitive biological entity. Right. So, and there is a sense of self that arises from that. Okay. Secondly, there is a sense of self that arises from our moment-to-moment experience of the mind. Okay, our concepts, ideas, emotions, and so forth. And the, you know, if you notice, it's just interesting to note as an object of mindfulness, every thought you have, you know, there's a sense of self arising from that, and it's also reflected in our body, isn't it? You have a sense of self where you're feeling confident. It's like, yeah, our body changes. You have a sense of self like, oh bloody hell, I really, you know, I said something really stupid at the party last night, and I'm, you know, regretting it now. It's like, oh God, the body language changes, right? So there's a sense of self, a tangible experience of self that accompanies every thought, every emotion, every idea. Okay, so these two, the bodily self and the mental self, are what we call our ego. Okay, and from the perspective of what I'm calling the Western tradition of mindfulness, the idea is to develop these to greater and greater levels of height and depth, to evolve them continually, to greater and greater degrees of integration, of harmony, of competency, of capacity to experience joy and other positive emotions, capacity to use the mind in greater and higher ways, to accomplish our own happiness and fulfillment, and to make the world a better place, and so forth. So that's the essential domain of the Western tradition of mindfulness. Eastern tradition of mindfulness is what happens when you drop your body mind, or you temporarily let go of your body mind, as we did in the exercise. There's a space, isn't there? Okay. It's not something you can't fight to achieve it. It's just a space that actually it's there all the time. But when you start to really relax the body so that you can, so your attention is not taken up by it too much, and you let go of the thoughts within the mind, there's a space there, a space that is purely living awareness, just a living, open, spacious experience. Okay, so. And there's a particular, as I'm talking about this, you go back to the exercise, there was a particular experience of self that arose from that experience of pure awareness, wasn't there? That is different from, you know, when you're thinking about, you know, how badly you played in last night's game of squash, or whatever it is. You know, it's, rather than having a very personal, specific sense of self around a particular set of actions and experiences, there is just this kind of open, spacious awareness where the sense of self is kind of just open, expansive, naturally peaceful, naturally congruent, naturally integrated within itself. And you don't really have to do anything much, you just have to allow it to be there. Okay, so this experience, essential experience of self arising from purely from the experience of living awareness, is, again, traditionally speaking, within the Eastern tradition, the object of attainment of mindfulness practice, which is to say this experience of what we might call a transcendent self, a self that is not specific to your particular body mind, that is universal in nature, that is common to all of us. So when, and that in terms of classical spiritual practice, this is what you mean. When you realize this, when this becomes your main idea of your main experience of self, then at that point you become enlightened. Okay, so if your main identity, when you think I, if your main sense of identity, let's say 51%, slightly more than this, right, you've got 51% is of your main identity is in that spacious open awareness, okay, and you're actually making your decisions and choices from that space, then you can say, okay, that person is enlightened. Not because, and that doesn't mean they're perfect, absolutely not, okay, but what it means is, from the point of view of spiritual enlightenment, their identity has become that kind of universal self, or that transcendent self, or from a Buddhist point of view, called the no-self. Called the no-self because it has no characteristics in terms of form, no mental or physical characteristics. Okay. So, the problem with, again, I'm painting very broad brushstrokes. The problem with the Eastern tradition of mindfulness and of spirituality is that it is traditionally quite anti-ego, anti-mind, the world. Okay, so you have it's almost like there is your enlightened self and your conventional ego, your sense of I in the world are set up in opposition to each other. In order to achieve an enlightened self, you need to go beyond your ego. And the ego is the problem. The ego is the thing that is in the way. Okay? So, with mindful self-leadership, it's about actually, in order to go beyond the ego, you first need to have a competent, functioning ego. You can't say, I'm terribly unhappy as an ego. I feel incompetent with the world. I can't deal with my emotions and my senses and so forth. And it causes me all sorts of inconvenient attachments, jealousies and anger. So therefore, I'm going to transcend it all. Get it out of the way. It's just too painful, right? There's a lot of people, again, you go to a spiritual center of any kind, there are a lot of people, they're there because they want to escape, right? The bottom line reality is it's a way of escaping an inconvenient, painful, messy reality that we're all living in, right?
So, the opium of the masses.
Huh?
The opium of the
masses. Indeed. So there's an opium of the masses, if you're a spiritual person, is I can get out. I can escape. Okay. So, with mindful self-leadership, is the idea is that you can be developed, or not you can, but also you need to develop a competent ego, you need to develop a happy ego, you need to develop a courageous, curious, caring sense of self in the world that is competent and adequate to all the challenges that all the messy, inconvenient, painful, tiring, and also beautiful, wonderful, radiant challenges that you're going to experience in your life. That needs to be firmly taken responsibility for, firmly developed, and rejoiced in, at the same time as recognizing there is a space in each moment of your awareness that is beyond that, that is enlightened, that is that doesn't have any problems. Okay, so there are quite a few people in the world who, well, actually there's not that many, but you know, there are quite a few talented meditators in the world who are enlightened in the classical sense of the word. That is to say, they have realized the formless, timeless, spacious dimension of their being, of their self, and who have located a substantial amount of their identity in that space. And in that sense, they're enlightened. That doesn't mean to say they're not emotionally immature, incompetent in many aspects of their ego. They don't experience all sorts of incongruences in terms of other areas of their life, sexual, ethical, somatic or whatever. It doesn't mean any of that. So, and there are plenty of people who are deeply competent in terms of their conventional sense of self, their ego, who have no concept, no space in their moment-to-moment experience where this kind of wonderful, radiant experience of enlightenment gets in. There's no crossover for many people, okay? So what we're trying to do with mindful self-leadership is lead ourselves and lead our moment-to-moment experience of self to a result where we are happy and comfortable with our sense of self arising from the body-mind, we're also developing that wonderfully relaxing, open, spacious experience of our enlightened or transcendent self, which is really simply the experience of spacious, open, living awareness, and bringing them together in a complementary whole. Okay? So that we can work on fulfilling our own happiness, fulfilling our own wishes, and being fully aware of what are the obstacles within ourselves that are in the way, and not trying to duck them. We are owning the full responsibility for our choices, our experience of the creative power that lies with being the person who is in the center of our reality, whilst at the same time being able to have an experience of self that is beyond that, where there is part of ourself, this conventional aspect of self, that is always working towards a goal, always developing ourself, will always be solving the next problem. So you solve, you know the experience, you solve one problem in your life, what happens? It gets replaced by another, right? So and this is the experience of the conventional self, is we go from one problem to the next, to the next, to the next, hopefully, if we're using it in the right way, using it to develop the self, develop our wisdom, developing our courage, developing our capacity to be curious, to care, to encounter that experience of reality in an open-hearted way. Okay, so that experience of self exists along a timeline, going from past to present to future, meeting one imperfection after the next, after the next, after the next. Hopefully, if we are choosing to, and we are practicing mindful self-leadership, growing with each experience. But it never ends, you know. And it never, there's never a point at which it becomes perfect. Well, you know, maybe there's been a point in your life when things have all been perfect. The right girl, the right boy, the right job, the right environment, the right house. Then what happens? It changes, isn't it? That's the experience of living in time. You know, you get perfection, it just changes, because that's what happens in time, things change. So there is this, you know, conventional experience of leading ourselves through time within the conventional world, and experience that, using that imperfection in a way that is serving us. But there is also a space that exists side by side with that experience of time, where there isn't any time, where all problems are solved, where everything is perfect as it is. And that's the space of pure living awareness. Okay, so we're not trying to use that experience of pure living, formless, timeless awareness to escape from the responsibilities of our life, but we are using it as a space that we can build into everything that we experience, and that we can drop into at any time just to relax. Just to relax, to regenerate ourselves deeply, and regenerate the enthusiasm, the curiosity, the courage, and the care that we need in order to re-energize ourselves and re-encounter our conventional moment-to-moment reality in a way that is going to serve us. Okay? So, what does the practice of mindful self-leadership involve? So all of these, everything that I've been talking about up to this point, really basically deals with five domains of practice. So these five domains are self-awareness, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, self-assertiveness, and self-transcendence. So there's a diagram on the back of the handouts that I've given you. That summarizes these five practices. And again, they are a combination of what you might call Eastern and Western practices. So self-awareness is, you know, we had a look at that in the opening exercise. Being aware, you know, committing to be aware of your reality. So it's tremendously easy, and we do it all the time, to be partial in what you're paying attention to in your own personal reality, right? We're editing it all the time. Okay, we see what we want to see. So to commit to self-awareness is to commit to the totality of your experience of thoughts, ideas and emotions that are arising in each moment of your mind, for example. So if I have an emotion that I do not feel comfortable about, or that affects my fundamental sense of self-esteem, that might be, for example, guilt or shame or fear or anxiety, any of those things, then I can't solve that problem by editing it from my awareness. Okay? So the most effective way to lead myself to a positive, authentic solution to the challenge of that difficult emotion is, first of all, to be aware of it, to assent to its existence. If I don't assent to its existence, the only other option is repression. Okay? Repression may start out as a suppression, which is to say I'm aware of it, but I'm pushing it out of my attention. But then suppression practiced over a long period of time becomes a repression, which means basically you're editing your reality without even being aware that it's happening. It becomes an automatic process. Okay. So the thing is about emotions that you repress is that you never get rid of them. So rather than actually getting rid of them, which is what you're trying to do, they actually start to run your life, run your agenda. Okay. So if you feel particularly anxious whenever it comes to thinking about where am I going to go in terms of my career, or in terms of my relationship with my partner, if you repress that anxiety and, you know, push it out of your awareness and focus on doing something else, anything to keep your focus on that, then there's very little chance you're going to come up with an effective solution to the causes of that anxiety. Right? So in order to lead yourself beyond that anxiety, the first step is self-awareness. This makes me feel really anxious. The first step is not around that. How can I avoid this anxiety? How can I get rid of it? It's like, how can I... So with self-leadership, is how can I step into that experience of anxiety with curiosity, with courage, with care, and take it on? Okay. So the self-awareness practice is just being mindfully aware of the totality of each moment of your awareness and being committed to trying not to edit that reality in ways that are, in the long term, harmful for you. Harmful for your capacity to lead yourself towards the life that you really want to lead. Okay. So, second practice following on from self-awareness is self-acceptance. So this is a refusal to turn away, disown or deny any of your inner experiences or behaviours. Okay? So, it's not saying everything about myself, my behaviours, my thoughts and so forth is fine, is all good. It's not saying that. It's saying that in order to lead myself to the best experience of my life and my reality that I can, I first need to be fully congruent and acceptant of who I am right now, warts and all. So I need to be able to accept myself as I am on all levels right now. So that is to say, you know, I accept at the moment, if I look at, you know, and again, this is a very much a challenge for our psychological vision, because we, you know, as a psychologist amongst you will know, we have this thing called a self-image, okay, which is our idea of who we are and what we do. Okay, our idea of who we are and what we do, and then there is the reality of who we are and what we do. Okay, and very often our self-images, because we're very invested in this self-image, we're quite happy to edit out or not see the incongruence between who we think we are and our actual behaviour. Okay, so self-acceptance is to look nakedly at our idea of who we are and how it matches up to our actual moment-to-moment experience of behaviours, emotions and thoughts, and if there are incongruences, to be able to accept them first of all. You know, not to excuse ourselves, but to be able to say, this is me. This is who I am, and I accept that. And I'm prepared to be a friend to any aspects of myself that are not currently congruent with how I would currently like to be, in order to lead them, or lead us, if you like, myself and my behaviours, my emotions, into a space that is going to be mutually beneficial for both of us, where we can find a solution, a mutually enhancing, happy-making solution to both of our agendas. Okay. So the third practice is then self-responsibility, which is, you know, it's taking responsibility for the cause of being your own, cause of your own choices, and the cause of one's own actions. So it's not responsibility in terms of moral blame, but just in terms of recognizing you're the chief causal agent of your life and your behavior. Okay. So this is, again, in the exercise, this is what we try to come to a point at the end, where it's just recognizing you're the chief causal agent of your life. You know, there's no one else coming to save you in these terms. You know, there's this Eastern idea of mantras or Zen koans, right, objects of meditation. But one of my favourite Western ones I got from a guy called Nathaniel Brown is, no one is coming to save you. You know, I sit with this a lot, right? And it's one of my favourites in terms of mindful self-leadership. And the thing is, if you're trying to say, come on, please save me, what we do is we end up giving away our dearest needs and wishes to the agenda of other people. Even if they're very sincerely wanted to help us, they don't know what our deepest needs and wishes are. They can't take responsibility for that. We have to know, you know. So this, you know, again, speaking very generally, this is quite often where conventional, and I could be wrong here, but I'll put it out there, conventional self-leadership.
I love the way you look directly at me.
Right. Well, I know you're a self-leadership, a leadership coach, right? Sorry,
and I wrote the book on self-leadership.
Exactly. So I'm holding this up. This is my speculation. I'm not an expert on the self-leadership field per se, but essentially, leadership begins with self-responsibility, right? If you're not prepared to take responsibility, you can't lead yourself. So in mindful self-leadership, a lot of attention is paid to these first two stages, which is the self-awareness and the self-acceptance, as a basis for self-responsibility. Okay. So we're congruent, or yeah, absolutely congruent. Okay. So there we go. So, but a lot of people think, okay, if I'm going to lead myself, I need to take responsibility, and. But without these first two stages, it's a bit of a mishmash. You have some success, some failure. Sometimes you're fighting against yourself, against forces within you that you don't understand. So just starting at stage three, it can bring a mixed process of results. So self-responsibility is fundamental to mindful self-leadership. But the basis of it begins with self-awareness and self-acceptance. Okay. So, for example, if you start with self-responsibility, like, I've got this horrible attachment to my work colleague, and I need to get rid of it. I need to lead myself beyond it. And then what I do is then I end up repressing the kind of deep emotional attachment to this colleague that I have, and I get into a war with my emotions and end up in a mess of internal conflict and repression. That's not really marvellous mindful self-leadership.
Self-management. That's a distinction between self-leadership and self-management.
Okay. So that is self-management, is it?
It can be formed in that way.
Okay. So it's a temporary coping strategy, which in terms of long-term results doesn't bring you what you really want, which is a resolution of the conflicting emotion. Okay. So, but anyway, point three, self-responsibility is no one else is coming to save me. This is my life. I need to take responsibility for it, you know. And you know, I can, in terms of the moment-to-moment experience, I notice this all the time. There is that. There is always this part of me that's wanting, I wish somebody else would do this for me. And it's just, and again, in terms of self-awareness, it's self-awareness. First of all, you don't deal with it like, go away, get rid. You know, it's just like I recognise there is part of me now really doesn't want to take responsibility for this. Would rather just be able to drink coffee and get a paycheck, benevolent paycheck every month, just to be a nice guy, right? So I recognise that part of my mind is turning toward that as an option. Self-awareness, self-acceptance. Yep, there it is again. You know, and it's not going to go away anytime soon. But then self-responsibility. I make a choice. I'm not going to go to that place. I understand perfectly well why it's tempting. And I understand perfectly well why part of me should want that. But I'm not going to take that route because I know I'm the primary cause of my reality. Self-responsibility. So then self-assertiveness, stage four, is okay, so what am I going to do about this? It is my responsibility. You know, no one else. No, I'm not going to get that benevolent paycheck and that cup of coffee for free. What am I going to do? How am I going to solve this? So we bring up the full attention, the full curiosity, courage, care, and intelligence of ourselves to the challenge that we want, and to the challenge of finding the solution that is going to be best for us and for the significant others in that situation. Okay. So, step five, self-transcendence. Okay, so this is what we were talking about earlier. This is just learning to recognize the formless, timeless, essentially aware or enlightened dimension of yourself and integrate it into your day-to-day experience of who you are and what you do. So, again, this is being able to hold the recognition of, I've got a problem that I need to solve and there's no problem at all. In a complementary, mutually enhancing whole. Okay, so I'm not using this formless, timeless dimension that is always comfortable and always spacious, da 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 da, in order to evade responsibility for my real-time issues. I'm just using it as a space where I can step back, take, relax deeply into, regenerate my energy. Take a deeper, bigger perspective and bring that back into the process of taking responsibility for leading myself into the life that I wish to lead. Okay. So, the practices of mindful self-leadership that I'll be teaching in the workshop and on the online, the five-week online course, are essentially, each of them are experiential processes for engaging your own with your own experience of mindful self-leadership. Okay, so there is some basic cognitive structure here, like the five steps and so forth. But each exercise that mindful self-leadership is about moving into an experience. How do I move into a direct interface with my moment-to-moment experience of reality, and within that living space, become a mindful leader of myself. Okay. So, that's kind of about it. I mean, are there any questions that people have? Anything that people would like to ask arising out of the... Where does this course come from?
Yeah.
It comes from me. In the sense that it's a, I came up with the content, and it's a, I mean, the company I run is called Integral Meditation Asia, and essentially they, what it is, I mean, my background is I spent my first decade after graduating as an artist training in the Tibetan tradition of meditation, 5 years preparing to be a monk, 5 years as a monk. And I came out of that for various reasons, partly to do with the issue that I was talking about earlier, which is there is a certain sense in which traditional spiritualities tend to emphasize the transcendence of the ego rather than bringing the ego into a congruent, integrated whole. So there were certain questions that I really felt I needed to answer that lay outside of that particular domain of practice. So I then, you know, started to complement my basic training with a lot of Western modalities of psychological practice and what you might call integral philosophy. I mean, the integral in integral meditation is actually a nod to a guy called Ken Wilber, who is an integral philosopher and who is, you know, one of the main figures in what you might call the integral movement, which is a worldwide movement towards, you know, integrating different disciplines into complementary wholes, essentially. So what mindful self, my job in integral meditation Asia is to weave different Eastern and Western models of meditation and mindfulness into complementary wholes. So you have the development of the self and the transcendence of the self in a same practice in a complementary whole, rather than I've got to overcome my ego in order to achieve enlightenment, or I've got to stay in the world and become a competent Anthony Robbins type ego and sacrifice enlightenment. You could do both, and actually we need to do both. And when you do both, the sum becomes a lot greater than the parts. If you have a competent, functional, happy ego together with the enlightenment experience, there's a massive explosion starts to take place in terms of your potential. So everything that I teach in Integral Meditation Asia is about that, essentially. All the different courses. And Mindful Self-Leadership is looking at that. How to bring the experience of the conventional self and the enlightened self into a complementary whole in order to lead ourselves to our goals in a way that is complementary to helping other people find fulfillment too. You know, again, it's not either or. It's like, am I being selfish by learning to own my responsibility for my choices and being a mindful self leader? No. It's like I put on the diagram, there's a quote at the bottom of the first box, which is, you know, from Ayn Rand, which is, it says, to say I love you, one must first learn to say the I. Right? So loving people without other people who are other selves, without having a firm, solid grasp of yourself as an I, is an abstraction, isn't it?
You know. It's also a road to codependency.
Very possibly. Very possibly. I mean, this is something I saw a lot in spiritual circles, which is, you know, universal compassion is a way of depersonalizing responsibility for the moment-to-moment experience of compassion for yourself. Okay, it's so in order to say I love you, there has to be, you know, an equal experience of loving the other person and a solid sense of who you are. You know, so.
And the sense of loving yourself as well.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, again, well, that comes back to what you said about codependence. And if you don't love yourself, and then whether you know it or not, you're looking, because there is no source of love within yourself for yourself. You need it from an outside source, which means you will cling to somebody else as the source of that love, and so you will build codependent relationships, essentially. Yeah. But again, it's a both and. If you love yourself, the capacity to love others and to receive love from others increases exponentially, right? So again, it's a both and rather than either or. So the thing, I suppose, that, you know, the thing that is unique about these particular courses is the emphasis on the moment-to-moment engagement of your reality, your personal reality, through mindfulness practice. That is the thing that would distinguish, you know, these courses from other courses. You know, but the opening exercise is a fairly good example of the sort of things we'd be doing, but with different emphases. So, for example, the 3-hour workshop, there are 4 fundamental practices, all of which are about different ways of learning to engage our experiential reality in a way that will enhance our self-leadership. And again, self-leadership is not necessarily prescriptive. It's not going to tell you what to do. It's going to give you the tools to figure out what it is you need to do. So it's a series of processes which deliberately doesn't answer the questions for you specifically, because what it's designed to do is help you to make those choices for yourself with confidence. So it's not a set of prescriptions. It's a set of complementary ways of engaging your world and learning how to develop the self-confidence, the self-trust to make the decisions that are going to be right for you. So, apart from this talk, there are two ways to engage in the mindful self-leadership practices. The first one is on the 18th, which is the 3-hour workshop, which I'll be doing here. And then the second way is that on the 22nd, I'll be starting a 5-week online course, which is a slightly more in-depth way of engaging in the mindfulness self-leadership practices. And essentially, if you want to do that, you'll be given a web reference and a password, and each week I'll be uploading the next module, so it'll be a 5-week course, and you can just basically go to the website, go to the page, type in the password, access the content, listen to it online or download it to your computer, and engaging it whenever you want. Okay. So
it's the same content or it's complementary?
Complementary content, yes. So you could, quite a lot of people on my mailing list don't live in Singapore. So I try and do a course that is online as well. It's also designed, the 3-hour course is quite a brief course. 3 hours to learn the whole process is not super long. So the idea is you could do a 3-hour course to get the basics, and then you could have a 5-week course where you'd be investigating in more depth the practices. So to do both and would be a good option for that. Okay. Price-wise, it's all there in the flyer. It's kind of the 3-hour workshop is 130. The online course is $200, but if you pay before May the 8th, it's $180. There you go, $20. What a saving. And you can do both for a combined price of $300, which is slightly less than the combined price, or $285 if you pay before May the 8th. So, simple options if you'd like. But I'd like to thank you very much for coming down, for taking the time out of your weekend to come and listen and to come and engage. It's been a pleasure. If you have any other further questions about the practice of mindful self-leadership or the courses, you can just that occur to you subsequent to this, just email me. It'll be a pleasure to respond, and thank you for coming. Thank
you. Can we sign up now?
You can, indeed. Yeah, no problem.